When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Had something happen today that it's got me angry all day. It's one of these things where you go, if you have good fortune and you're doing well, what good is it to beat up on someone who's not doing well? Here's the story. I had someone, kind of give me this long drawn out, I was at the store and I saw this woman. And she had one of those EBT cards. And evidently there wasn't enough money on it. And she pulled out a credit card. And I'm going, okay, and? And just went into this whole bit of anger. And look, I'm going to argue it's not entirely his fault. It's what we've been trained. It's how we've been trained to think about folks. They're lazy, or they're just trying to game the system, or just trying to get away with something. And look, there may be some people out there that are truly like that, but the reality is the vast majority of people who need assistance, who need help, need it. And as this guy was regaling me with his tale of anger at this woman for how dare she have a credit card, and probably had a car in the parking lot, and probably had cable TV, and who knows what else. I stopped him, and because this is what I do. I have gone into stores and I've seen people trying to ridicule someone using an EBT card, and I shut them down, just like I shut this guy down. I said, you don't know anything about her. You don't know anything about the circumstances under which she needs that help. You know nothing other than what you assume. And I said, look, the reality is, as a kid, if it weren't for ADC, aid to dependent children, if it weren't for help of subsidized housing, if it weren't for Social Security death benefit after my mother passed away, I don't know that I would be where I am today. I don't know that I would have made it. I don't know what would have happened. Now, it was no great grand living. It came with its massive humiliation. And you were not living high off the hog, so to speak. But you got by. And it was a helping hand. And I'm a big supporter of giving people a helping hand, giving them opportunity to go as far as their talents and wants and drive will take them as well. But making sure that in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization, at its wealthiest moment, that the least we can do is make sure that people are fed and have a roof over their head. I don't think that's too much to ask. And, I said, and I posed the question because this story came up, a couple of years ago, a woman in a Mercedes, going through the food bank line was being ridiculed because she needed to put food on the table. Well, she's got a Mercedes. And you go, her husband lost his job. She lost her job. They're in the debt up to the hilt. What do you do? The car is paid for. It's the only thing they really own. Do you expect them to sell the car, take a major beating on that, buy something less reliable, just so they look poor enough? And this is where, my mind keeps coming back to how we've been trained to distrust and really to despise each other. to pit each other against each other because they're getting something I didn't get. And I immediately turned it around. I said, look, you know, do you care that much about what the billionaire class gets, what the business roundtable is screwing you over with? Does that at all bother you? And he's like, well, yeah, of course. I go, but not to the same extent. And the answer is he doesn't see that every day. He's confronted every day at the supermarket with someone that he assumes is lazy and shiftless and is not working as hard as he is. When the reality is what we know, a lot of people who collect our social programs, be it food stamps, be it LIHEAP electric assistance, be it, you know, Section 8 housing, any of that stuff, school lunch programs for their kids, any of that stuff. Most of those people work in low-paying, crummy jobs that don't have any union rights, don't have any health benefits, don't have any retirement security, basically pay a poverty wage to just keep them showing up. So I spent time going, you know, through this idea of, you know, to me, I want everyone to work. I've said before, I'm against handout programs. I am against, you know, look, I'm 8 years old. I remember this day like it was yesterday. I'm 8 years old. My mother sends me to the Bi-Low store a couple of blocks from our housing project. And has a list of things we need to pick up. It says there should be an extra 10 cents left over. You can get yourself one of these Nutty Buddy bars, which are one of my favorite things on the planet. It just is what it is. And so I go to the checkout. And there's a long line of people behind me. And I'm just a kid. And this woman, this angry, evil, horrible woman, makes a huge deal out of this 10 cent Nutty Buddy bar. Can he buy this with those? And I remember the humiliation to this day. It's one of the things, honestly, it's one of the things that drives me. And you know, you ask my wife or anyone who's known me, I've never not worked 70 plus hours a week in my working life. But I remember that moment. And I want that for no child, for no person who needs help. Now, what I know, growing up where I did, not on the bus line, not near any jobs that were sufficient, and the ones that were a couple of miles away, and it took some hike to get there. Again, not on the bus line. I've always been a believer in works programs. If the private sector can't or more likely won't create enough jobs for everyone, especially the kind of jobs like I've been fortunate to have throughout my working life, then we in the public sector have to do this. And we have to figure out a way to make that even the crummy jobs, the ones that pay poverty wages, I was going to use a whole set of other different words there, but let's say poverty wage jobs, but even those people can find dignity and worth it. And it was brought up the other day that Warren Buffett had suggested one of the things that he would like to see, as opposed to a minimum wage increase, is an increase in the earned income tax credit. I am not against that. I think that's actually a really good idea. The idea that if you work 40 hours a week, you do what's expected of you, you work hard, you play by the rules, you should get ahead. And we should have a redistributive mechanism like the earned income tax credit to ensure that, well, work is rewarded. Because look, you know, the first thing everyone says about minimum wage, you know, if you raise the minimum wage, you know, those employers, they're not going to be able to pay more than minimum wage. And you go, well, should they be in business if their business model is dependent on paying people poverty wages? Is that the kind of economy that we want? And I argue, no. It's not the kind of economy I want at all. I want one where people participate, people work. You do your 40 hours, you do what you need to do. And look, even more if you want to. But that work should provide a reasonable existence. You should be able to put a roof over your head, put food on the table. Sadly, corporate America has trained us to look at each other with a jaundiced eye. Like my friend who lectures me on the EBT card. Instead of looking at that person in line going, you know, well, what's wrong with them? Ask, how can we help them? How can we make their lives better? Do you think they want to use that? Do you think they're happy being in that situation? Well, Rick, some are. Well, maybe a few are. I've never met them. The people that I've met who've needed this kind of help hate it. They want to do better. They want opportunity. They want help. And this is where government, this is where smart policy, sound investment, that's where this stuff would come into play, in my view. My mother wanted a job, but the 70s were not a good time for single mothers. She was always the last hired and the first fired. But sorry, got to keep the men working. That was the 70s and before, worse than that. So it was back to the clown money. I don't want that indignity for any child. And I've talked about this before on the show. I think about the people growing up in the housing project that I grew up in. That kid growing up in the unit that I grew up in. What opportunities do they have to lead a successful life? What opportunities are granted for them? What paths are available for them? I was fortunate. I was able to get a good union job and worked very hard at it. Saved a little, did some smart things monetarily, and have done okay. Is that path still available for that kid? I argue the window's closing. And for me, instead of mocking and instead of looking at those folks like there's something wrong with them, again, maybe we help them. Better education, healthcare more affordable, better pay in the workplace, transportation, childcare. You know, I brought up the fact with this guy, you take a lot of things for granted. You had a lot of invisible capital that I didn't have. And I had a lot of invisible capital that maybe that person that you're complaining about didn't have. And he said, well, what do you mean by invisible capital? I go, you had parents. Parents who loved and cared about you. That's the first basis. Made sure you went to school. Make sure you had food on the table, clothes on your back. Make sure you did the right thing. You stayed on the straight and narrow. When you wanted to buy your first car, maybe helped you buy your first car. Maybe made sure that you showed up to places on time. Had some internal work ethic that was instilled in you as a young person and built into who you are today. It takes a lot of influence to do that. Sadly, some people aren't as fortunate as you or even me. Some people don't have that invisible capital. Donald Trump, for instance, tons of invisible capital. When you go, well, everyone can do what Donald Trump did. No, not everyone can. Donald Trump had lots of invisible capital. His name, for instance, will get him into rooms that I don't even know where the building that room is in. So here's someone who, standing on third base, thought he hit a triple. Given millions of dollars and the name. Now, what's interesting to me is, and what's frustrating as well, is I think we know this stuff. I think we know better. I think we want to be better. I think it's just what we've been spoon-fed, this kind of division. Instead of saying, you know, one, what good is an economy if you have a large percentage of people in poverty? A large percentage of people who have no health security, who have no retirement security, who have no job security, who worry every day, am I going to get fired today for no reason? We can make those changes. And I go back to myself, and everything I talk about is something that I've lived, something that I believe in. The reason I'm such a strong union supporter is because it made my life better. And I saw it as a young kid. When the neighbor got the job at Ford, immediately their lives got better. Food at the end of the month. In our neighborhood, that was miraculous. The kids got better clothes, secondhand bikes, eventually a secondhand car, eventually moved into the houses across the street. Their lives got better immediately and right before your eyes. That's what a job can do. And this is where, you know, I agree with Ronald Reagan. The best anti-poverty program is a job. I've amended that. The best anti-poverty program is a union job. One with good wages, one with health security, retirement security, job security, and opportunity. So I got to tell you, I'm a little frustrated, a little angered over the conversation today, but I needed to get that out. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Does it bother you when you see people in the supermarket mocking or somehow attacking people for the fact that they sometimes need some help? Do you think of a better idea on how we ensure that folks are able to put food on the table and a roof over the head? I'd love to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting new poll by the folks at Civic and Daily Kos. They find that 63% of Republican voters say that they either want the RNC to pay Donald Trump's bills or they don't care if the RNC pays Trump's bills. Now, look, Trump's got tons of legal bills. You've got 63% of Republicans saying, yeah, we want to pay, or we don't care if they pay. That's remarkable. Only 26% of Republicans say, no, why would the RNC, why would the Republican Party pay for Donald Trump's legal fees? Why would they do that? They're his. I know. But Rick, he is the Republican Party, and that is true. Now, here's the weird thing. Now that you've got this idea that the Republican voters are okay with paying Trump's bill, you got Laura Trump as co-head of the RNC, which I guarantee there will be entertainment coming out of that. That's all I'm going to say. But, you know, here's the thing. The RNC now overhauling their entire election operation. As I've said, they're going full on Trumpsky. And what they've done is they have now ended their minority outreach program. The weird thing is they keep talking about how much they're making inroads into minority communities. This may have been part of it, but I can't imagine that this is going to be really helpful. Not going to be helpful at all. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes as they start slashing and burning. Because, look, they're going to have to start selling the furniture. That's the reality in this. If you're going to pay Trump, all of Trump's bills, his legal fees, they're going to have to start selling the furniture. And renting out some rooms in the RNC headquarters. Maybe selling some kind of a trade name to go along with the RNC. You know, like... You know, you can look at the football fields. They've all, like, you know, what is it, Invesco Field at Mile High, or Empowerment Field, or whatever it is at Mile High, or, you know, whatever. All of them have, you know, a corporate sponsor attached to the, you know, now maybe the RNC will have, you know, who knows? You know, maybe X, formerly known as Twitter, will be the sponsor of the RNC. Who knows? Now, what are they doing with money? Well, they're doling it out. This isn't going to be, see, it's my view that it's not going to be investing in races or investing in the good of the party as the RNC was doing. This is going to be about making Trump even a bigger authoritarian figure, a bigger king, if you will. And I just saw this story over in North Carolina. Evidently, former Representative Mark Walker, from North Carolina, Republican, he was going to run against a candidate that Trump backed for the House seat. So what does Trump do? No, I can't have you running against my guy. So evidently, this Mark Walker is going to go work for Trump. Doling out the jobs, doling out the money. Good bit of patronage, if you will. He's going to, I guess, immediately begin working on the faith groups and minority communities. Yeah. Interesting. It's going to be an interesting day. We closed down all the minority programs and we took all the money and we gave it to Mark Walker. It just is what it is. Now, the weird thing is, and I saw this on social media, and I had to double check it just to make sure. Evidently, there have been more Republican House members to resign than the House of Representatives have had bills signed. And we now have Ken Buck, who announced on Tuesday, March 12th, that he is going to resign before the end of his term. He was originally not going to seek re-election, now going to resign effective March 22nd, which is interesting because that is going to trigger a special election. Now, the weird thing is Lauren Boebert knew she was going to get clocked in her district. I guess it's, what, the third congressional district there in Colorado. She's now going to go run in Ken Buck's district, the fourth district in Colorado. And by Buck resigning, that's going to trigger a special election that she can't run in. Because if she wants to run in that special election, she has to resign from her current seat to be able to run for the future seat. So what you're going to have is you're going to have an incumbent just a couple of months long, but you're going to have a Republican incumbent, because it's a Republican district. I don't see a Democrat winning that district. But you're going to have a Republican incumbent running against the challenger, Lauren Boebert. And look, you know, Boebert sees conspiracy everywhere. And, you know, she's like, you know, the establishment, they concocted a swampy backroom deal. And you got to love the language that they come up with. But I look at this as another one of these moments where you go, Ken Buck, not a guy I've always agreed with or much on policy, but you got to give the guy credit for standing on character, saying, look, it's too partisan. Didn't want to impeach Mayorkas, thinks going after impeaching Biden is wrong and doesn't want to be part of it anymore. And look, this is bad for democracy. In my view, this is bad for democracy. Look, I can disagree with someone like Ken Buck on policy, but on the idea of democracy, the idea of this hyper-vicious partisanship that you see mostly coming from the extreme right. Look, there's some on the left too, but the right, the Republican Party right now is the extremist party. And the question is, how do you pull that back? And Buck, you know, someone that you had hoped might be able to bring some sanity, is like, done. Gave it a try, didn't work. And what does that mean going into November? Now, I've said for a long time that the way we reclaim our democracy is by purging these extremists, getting rid of them, finding people who believe government can do things, believe government should do things, and then willing to actually do those things. For instance, like I started off with, making sure that we have jobs programs, making sure that no kid goes hungry. You know, we, during the pandemic, we figured out how to cut child poverty by more than half. And it was as meager as giving families an extra $300 a month to make sure that at the end of the month there was food on the table. And Republicans and, well, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin yanked that away. Stole that opportunity for children to have a normal existence. And look, you know, I've said this before as well. In the most cruel fashion. You know, when I grew up, we didn't know we were poor. We didn't know how bad things were. We thought everybody was like us. We thought everyone, you know, struggled at the end of the month where there was nothing in the house. We thought everyone had to wear, you know, second, third generation, you know, clothes to school. We thought that was normal. Had someone come in and shown us it can be different, like they did with making sure that, you know, kids got fed, and then in one of the cruelest fashions possible, ripping it away, saying, sorry, psych. I don't know. Makes me angry. But it comes back to us. Ultimately, we're in a moment where there's a difference. You know, there was a time where I might agree with some people going, oh, there's not a lot of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. You know, there's some fringe issues that, you know, they're shades. There has never been a wider gap between Democrats and Republicans. The choice, very clear, on policy after policy. Do you believe in workers' rights to organize? Do you believe in you know, the idea of the EPA being able to regulate clean water and clean air? Look, as someone who grew up in Cleveland, home of the Clean Water and Clean Air Act, I'm grateful we have it. My kids aren't going to see the horrible stuff that I saw growing up. If you believe in a regulatory body that is going to hold corporate power in check, then you're on the Democratic side. If you believe in treating people with dignity and respect, that's your side. Now, my Republican friends are like, no, we believe in all that until it comes down to actually doing it. And look, the guy I talked about at the beginning is a decent guy. I'm not bad mouthing him at all. I think he believes that he believes in people and he's going to be helpful and all of that stuff. But the words and the actions, gotta wonder. So for me, this election is about, one, saving democracy from authoritarian rule like we're seeing coming out of Trump. And two, it's about fairness and decency. It's that simple to me. I don't know where else you go with that. Save democracy. Be decent. There you go. For our Free Speech TV audience, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time. For our radio affiliates across the country, we're going to take a quick break. Back after this.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, March 19th, mark it on your calendar. That's the day Peter Navarro is going to go to jail. Yeah, 4 months. 4 months. But 4 months, kind of a slap on the wrist, participating in a coup and refusing to, to testify and all the stuff that he's done. But is a Trumper, is, one of the Trump folks. Kind of pulling away, though. But it'll be interesting to see how he does for 4 months. What kind of a person will jail change him? And here to share some thoughts on all of this and the other stories of the day, I've asked our good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Rich is the host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit on Facebook and YouTube. Also the co-founder of the Turn Left Pack. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure, Rick. I always enjoy it.
So 4 months, good, bad, not enough, too much. Where are you putting this?
To me, it's a slap in the face. Here's a person who has participated in a coup, and he's going to get 4 months in jail. And it bothers me because who gets 4 months? If a person of color is caught stealing a Snickers bar, they're going to get more than 4 months in jail. I mean, this is a person who participated in the coup. If you don't want people to always be trying a coup, then maybe you should set the punishment a little more than slaps on the wrist. I mean, literally, we almost lost our democracy. The truth is 200 years ago, all of these jackaloons would have already been hung. Our government would have dealt with them accordingly. And right now, we're watching a person like Navarro get a slap on the wrist for 4 months. I think it's sickening. I think that this is why other people are going to watch this, and they're going to realize if all you're going to get is 4 months, then let's try it again. Yeah. And that's the one thing that should be happening. We should be doing everything to make an example out of these people so that nobody else out there is going to say, I'm next. So I think it's garbage.
Now, to your point, stealing a Snickers bar gets you longer than that. There was a guy in Philadelphia, stole 3 peppermint patty bars and spent, over 500 days just awaiting trial in jail. Not to mention the sentence he got afterwards. So your point's spot on. But this is also what happens when you have a lot of money. This is what you get. But I got to tell you, still surprised he got even a day.
No, I understand, but goodness gracious. We have to be better than this. You're literally telling people that it's acceptable. It's acceptable to lie to Congress. It's acceptable to participate in a coup. I want to see these people go to prison. I want to see these people go down royally so that this doesn't happen again. If all you're going to do is give people slaps on the wrist, it's going to happen again.
Yeah,
nice. It will absolutely happen again. And maybe this time we're not so successful. Maybe this time we lose our democracy. So how is that going to sink in?
No,
it bothers me that we will send people, the average American, the people who works, the people who pay the freaking taxes, we'll send those folks to prison for far less. But yet a person that deals in politics, it's a free pass. This is sickening, and it's the worst thing that we could do. Because Make no mistake about it, people are watching.
Now, you brought up democracy, and look, the State of the Union, I thought Joe Biden did a great job of highlighting the two main points. One, we got to save democracy, and two, we got to fight for fairness. But this idea of saving democracy, something I got to tell you, growing up, never really thought we would have to fight to keep and to maintain, but here we are.
Yeah, I tell you, what sickens me is that we have a significant amount of people in this country that refuse to look at facts. And they are literally in a cult, and you can listen to them, you can interview them. The stuff that they say, you're going to sit there and you're going to gripe about the economy while you're wearing made in China Trump gear from head to toe, that probably costs you a lot more than what it normally would have cost for average stuff. I think that Joe Biden absolutely hit it out of the park. I don't think Donald Trump could do that right now. I think we've been watching these rallies with Donald Trump, and he's he's just a bumbling idiot. is what he is. And I'm telling you, Joe Biden come off as strong. And I thought that was one of the better State of the Union addresses that I can remember in my lifetime. I thought he did a great job.
No, outside of even the fact that he did deliver a good speech, it was the content of the speech. That, yeah. You know, and for me, I don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, look, we got two old guys running. That's the reality. I want to talk about their policies. At the end of the day, it's the people that they're going to bring along with them. It's the people that they're going to appoint to, you know, Department of Labor and Department of Commerce, yeah, and the Treasury Department. And we've seen who Trump will put into those places, anti-worker, anti-American, pro-corporate kind of people. And we're seeing what Biden has done. I'm solely on the side of the folks that Biden has brought along.
Absolutely. And once again, I mean, he is absolutely the number one president, probably and definitely in my lifetime, when it comes to unions. I mean, he's the first president to actually go walk a picket line. He's created over 14 million jobs. And oh, by the way, a lot of these jobs are union jobs. And union jobs, you can feed a family. You can raise a family on. So, you know, I mean, he is killing it. He is absolutely killing it. And the stuff that he spoke about, I thought that he ripped Trump quite well and Marge the train wreck Green. I let me just tell you this, too. I have to say, what really sickens me more than anything is the fact that Donald Trump went on camera and made fun of Joe Biden's stutter. There's 3 million people in this country that struggle with stutters. And I'm going to tell you that all of those people and their families should lash out and refuse to support Donald Trump. I mean, you know, we're talking about the person who was the president of the United States. And I mean, the things that he says, the things that he does, I mean, he is a man child that has never been held accountable for his actions. And please let that happen.
But Rich,
I think we need to see that.
But Rich, we know this is who he is. We know the cruelty is the point. And we know that his base sucks that stuff up. And he knows it. And that's the reason he gets away with it, because there's nobody on that side of the aisle who has the decency to put him in his place.
Well, I will tell you this. Every Democrat out there had better make sure that on Election Day, you are there, you are casting your vote, you're making sure people that you know that are Democrats have a ride to the polls. Everybody has to vote. Because let me tell you something. What Donald Trump is trying to do is Donald Trump is trying to skirt justice. That's what he was. He's trying to get him. He's hoping that he can push everything past that date, and then he wins. But let me tell you something. If he is successful in pushing everything past the date, folks, that's the most important reason why it's important for us to take back the House, keep Joe Biden in the White House, and increase our lead in the Senate. That means even if let's say he won, but we own the House and we own the Senate, well, then let him be a dictator on day one, because he'll be impeached on day two, and this time the Senate won't be able to save him. But he needs to go.
Well, I guess I don't have as much faith as you do. But, you know, my fear is Trump has already told us what he's going to do. It's all about retribution. It's all about revenge. And he's talked about using Schedule F to fire all of the federal bureaucrats he doesn't like. And this Project 2025, he's going to fill those positions with good loyalists, not people who are competent, not people who know what they're doing, but good followers, people who are sufficiently loyal to dear leader. And that's extraordinarily dangerous.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I'm just hoping that people are starting to wake up. You know, it's like the stutter thing. You know, once again, that's a group. You know, that is a group of people, and there's 3 million of them. And then you got to add another 1.5, because you got to think about mothers and fathers. And that's my thing, is every day Donald Trump says something in some capacity that is absolutely horrible. And to me, I believe that every day people are waking up. There was a video, and I'm going to play it on my show tonight on Ojeda Live. And it's a woman that said, Donald Trump, I voted for you in 2016. I voted for you for 2020, but I will not vote for you in 2024. I will be voting for Joe Biden. I cannot continue voting for somebody who literally goes low and makes fun of people, mocks people that struggle. I believe that there are people that are waking up in this country. I just so you, I do.
You don't see him generating any new voters. You just see him hemorrhaging his base a little bit. So yeah. You have some. I'm guessing you have faith come November, Biden's going to do okay.
Well, first off, Joe Biden beat him by 7 million votes. And I'm looking across the board. You know, we lost 1.3 million people to COVID. 885,000 of those were while Donald Trump was still in office. And I kind of think that, you know what? The majority of people who died of COVID were a lot of people that said, we think it's a hoax. We don't believe it. So I look at that and I say, you know what? That's a pocket. That's a group of people that will never be voting for Donald Trump ever again. See, I look at things like that. Hey, you got the Lincoln Project. You got all these organizations that are out here now that are exposing Donald Trump. You know, we're seeing, you know, all this stuff come out. I believe that he's not picking up any new followers. And I think that he's losing followers every single day. Once again, if I had a child that stuttered and I watched Donald Trump do what he did, absolutely. Done. I cut ties.
Well, that is the hope, because look, I don't want to see another 4 years of what we had. But here's the thing, and you alluded to it a second ago. There are voices out there. You had Katie Britt in the Republican response, that creepy, weird, from the kitchen Republican response to the State of the Union. You know, bring up that, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And the answer is no. People were dying 4 years ago. We were heading towards trucks being used as morgues. Things were not great. And stop trying to rewrite history.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, the stock market has broken 4 records under Joe Biden's watch. Inflation is at a 2-year, you know, it's been this way below 4% for 2 years. I mean, you can sit and talk all the crap you want to talk about. The truth is that Donald Trump isn't helping anybody, and Joe Biden is killing it.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is killing it. You know, and I'm packed. And oh, by the way, you know, insulin capped at $35 for the elderly. Now he's wanting to cap it at $35 for everybody in this country. That's a big deal. You know, he has forgiven so much predatory student debt. You know, and I'm going to tell you, I have a family member that literally had his college debt removed. My family member paid, and all he could afford was the normal payment. And he paid that for 20 straight years. And after 20 years, he still owed the exact amount that he borrowed. And that's a problem. No. So Joe Biden basically helping people that are struggling like that is a big deal, because when you get that taken off of your shoulders, you feel like you have been freed from prison. And once again, Joe Biden is making that stuff happen. Donald Trump is telling us that he wants to cut Social Security and Medicare. Every hardworking American out there that basically works a hard job that has to wait until they're 65 years old before they can draw Social Security, many of those people, you know what I'm talking about, will end up filing for early Social Security because they can't work anymore. Coal miners, people like that. And oh, by the way, they're voting for Donald Trump. But what they don't understand, what they need to know, is that Donald Trump is about to cut that in half if he wins the presidency. So I don't want to hear these people screaming and crying because they're broke after he wins. I want them to do everything in their power to be educated so that they don't vote for him, period.
You know, it's interesting. I keep hearing, you know, people say, well, we need to raise the retirement age from 65. Go, no, we did. For me, the retirement age is 67. I don't know about everybody else, but for me, it's 67. We've already done the raising. And well, I know there are also, people want to take it to 70 or 75. I've heard some crazy stuff lately. The reality is we've already raised the retirement age.
Yeah, you have to look at the retirement age they're talking about. Nikki Haley says that she thinks it should be 70 years of age. Now, let me tell you something. Life expectancy for black men in America is 69. And life expectancy for black women in this country is 70. So what they're saying is people of color, we'll work you to the day you die. That's it. And let me tell you something. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
No.
You know, you're supposed to be able to get your Social Security, and that plus your retirement will carry you through the month comfortably, and you don't have to worry about it. When we got people out there that are on Social Security that still have to cut their medicines in half, we've got a problem, and we can get away with that. We can fix that under Joe Biden.
No, and this is the thing that, and again, I go back to what Biden, I think, did well in the State of the Union. Talked about saving democracy, but also this idea of fairness and decency. That the Social Security is part of that fairness and decency. You know, look, are there some jobs people can work until they're 70? I'm sure there are. But most of the people I know, they're not going to make it.
No, no. Look, I go to the gym 7 days a week. You know, I still find myself thinking, I'm going to be lucky if I make it to 60. I mean, I've put my body through a lot. I mean, 24 years in the military, and I jumped out of planes for over 20 of them. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I want to be able, I'm retired. So, you know, I'm not in the same category. I'm very blessed, which I believe also that police officers and firefighters should be in the same boat. I think that they deserve to have retirements like we have in the military, which is phenomenal. Because once again, you could join the Army at 18 years of age, and at 38, you can retire and start drawing your retirement immediately. It's a great life. I love the military. But once again, you know, I want to make sure that I want to get my Social Security. I don't want you cutting mine. I paid into that. You paid into it. We want what we deserve. And I don't want to hear these Republicans talk about killing Social Security because they don't need it, because they got enough money squirreled away. Well, they'll never need Social Security. I want my money. I paid into it, and I deserve it. And so do you and everybody here.
I'm right there with you. Lastly, I know you've got some thoughts on Lauren Boebert and the announcement of Ken Buck that he's going to be leaving Congress on the 22nd of March, which is going to trigger a special election in that district, which is really, really a shot to Lauren Boebert. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think she's garbage. First and foremost, I think polling fourth or fifth in terms of where she's at in this race. So I guess she's going to sit this out, and she's going to run in the November election, like you recently told me. Other than that, I think that she has to resign. And my thoughts are, she makes $14,500 a month. I honestly don't know where a person with a gifted GED would ever make that kind of money. So I doubt very seriously that she's going to resign from anything. But I'll tell you, I don't think that she's going to win any election. I think that she's stuck her foot in her mouth enough, and she's just got to go. She's garbage. Her and Marge the train wreck Green, but like I said, keep Marge around a little bit because she's always a gaff machine.
She is a train wreck. I mean, she's the dumpster fire, and it's exactly, sadly, where the Republican Party is. But Rich, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff as always. I hope folks will check out your nightly hit, Ojeda Live, on Facebook and YouTube. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at that. Rich, as always, great stuff, my brother.
Thanks, my brother.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? You think another term for Lauren Boebert, or is she being sent to pasture? Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day that participants in the famed Bread and Roses strike gathered in Lawrence, Massachusetts to celebrate their victory. The strike had begun in January and was a hard-fought battle. More than 20,000 textile workers, most of them women, speaking more than 20 languages, participated in the action. It was a powerful stand of workers' solidarity across ethnic lines. On March 12th, the American Woolen Company agreed to most of the strikers' demands. In the days that followed, other companies also agreed to terms. The workers gained between 5 and 25% raises depending on their jobs. They also gained overtime pay. The ripples of this impact flowed throughout New England. It's estimated that 150,000 textile workers saw raises in the aftermath of the historic work action. at the gathering to commemorate the strike, leader of the industrial workers of the world, Big Bill Haywood, addressed the crowd saying, "You are the heart and soul of the working class. You, the strikers of Lawrence, have won the most signal victory of any organized body of working men in the world. You have demonstrated that there is a common interest in the working class that can bring all its members together." Despite the significance of this strike, the story is not taught in many of our schools. In 2011, the Zinn Education Project found that only 2 of the 10 major U.S. history textbooks discussed the strike. Today, let's take a minute to remember those brave women who declared, "Yes, it's bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too." For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman from New York, tweeted out, this is amazing. It's amazing with without any irony, without any shame. She tweets out, "I am proud to announce that I secured $1,857,000 for a water district development project for the town of Manassa in this year's appropriations process. This funding will go toward providing public water service to the residents of Manassa. Hashtag results, hashtag New York 21. Here's the problem. The funding for this came from the Inflation Reduction Act, President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, that Elise Stefanik and every single Republican voted against. So the fact that she's proud to take credit for the money that's coming into her district, even though she voted against it. And this is the kind of stuff that's infuriating because, look, the mainstream media doesn't pay much attention to this. And the right wing, outrage machine certainly is not going to bring this up. And there's really nothing on the other side to go, "Hey, Elise, hypocrite much?" It's literally incredible when you look at the fact that, and she's not alone. There are others who have done this. You get them all the time. They'll show up to the ribbon cutting ceremony, but voted against the bill. And they always come back with this, "Well, there was one part in, on page 476, the third paragraph, second sentence that I was opposed to. And I was voting my conscience." But I'll take this. And this is where, you go and you look at Biden and look, to Biden's credit, he has said, "I'm the president for everyone." And he's led like that. The fact that a good majority of the work that's coming in reshoring manufacturing, a good majority of the infrastructure work are done in states and in areas that did not vote for him. Do you think the other guy would do that? Do you think if Trump actually got something passed during his tenure that it would have benefited, a place that voted against him? Answer, not going to happen. And it's going to get worse. I had someone, recently go, what are you going to do if Trump wins in 2024? What are you going to do if he becomes president, on January 20th of 2025? What's the plan? Are you leaving the country? And I'm like, no, I'm going to stand here and fight. I love my country. I'm going to stand here and I'm going to defend our democracy. I'm going to fight for our Constitution. We do not have dictators. We do not have authoritarian rulers, even though, there's a great video out there. One of those guys went to a Trump rally and asked them, if Trump wants to be dictator, are you okay with that? And you got all these people going, yeah, if Trump wants to be dictator, we're okay with it. We want Trump to be dictator. Put all those people in their place. And you go, hey, dum-dums, you're part of those people. I mean, you're a little further down the list, but eventually, when they've done with all this, you're next. Look at his cabinet. When 80% of them will not endorse him for re-election, when a large number of them are probably going to be bankrupt because of their legal bills, because he threw them under the bus. Oh, boy. You know, the fact that someone would vote for him is just completely mind-blowing. But, you know, and here's the thing. It's not even on policy. Look, if you came to me and said, you know, Donald Trump, you know, fought for this policy, and that's the reason that I can respect that. Go, okay, you know, if that were true, okay, I get it. But it's not policy driven. It's hope and dream driven. It's they bought the Kool-Aid or the t-shirt and the hat. And maybe some of the red ink, I don't know, you know, bled into the skin and, you know, I don't know. But this election is really important. And it's important if we want to save what we grew up with. I mean, I was thinking about this recently that, you know, as a kid, you know, you never really thought about the horrible stuff that had happened in other countries. You know, governments falling and leaders being, you know, thrown in jail and all the kind of stuff that happens in third world tin pot dictatorships. In places, in banana republics. And to see the kind of, I don't know, to see the kind of chaos that's going on right now, it's going to take people of sound mind and want and will to save this country for the future. And the thing that I like about Biden the most is that he is old. That he's not someone who's going to go off half-cocked. He's not someone who's going to jump at every slight. He's someone who's going to calm things down. And I think that's been one of his greatest achievements, the fact that he has calmed things down a bit. It's easy to forget what the 4 years under Trump were. It's easy to forget how insane things were. Maybe we need to remember. And maybe we need to commit to saying, we don't want to go back. Don't want to go back to that. Can't do it. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said got under your skin, made you think, made you happy, made you mad. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.